netcasting from Chicago, Los Angeles, and Sydney. You're listening to this week's FX Podcast from FXGuide.com.
Hi, and welcome to the FX Podcast. I'm John Montgomery. In this episode, Mike talks with Jamie Hearing, digital effects supervisor at Clear Angle Studios. Now, if you've listened to the last couple of podcasts we've done, you've heard the name Clear Angle come up in both of them, working on both the Gaussian splat exploration with Union VFX, as well as scanning for Man on Fire. After Mike and I met up at FMX in Germany last month, I had to jet back to Mexico, but he actually had the opportunity to visit Clear Angle in the UK and check out in person some of what they were doing. Their services include full-body character scanning, head scanning, as well as environment capture, prop scanning, and more. So that's a bit of a background. Let's go ahead and cross to Mike and Jamie now.
Jamie, thanks so much for joining us. It's good to see you again.
It's great to see you, Mike. Thanks for having us.
And thank you for letting me visit the studios at Pinewood. That was great.
Yeah, it's really good to have you there, and glad to show you some of the tech and some of what we've been working on.
Yes, we'll get to the general stuff in a minute, but I guess the thing that I was really interested to do on the podcast today is we interview loads of companies, obviously, and your name keeps coming up as like the, well, then we had, like I was talking to the Man on Fire people, like, oh, and then we had clear angle scanning the, aircraft and blah, blah, blah. And so I thought, because your name comes up so much and because you've become such a dominant player in the production cycle, I thought we'd focus on the range of stuff you did, because often we're talking about a project where you guys have done one thing, but I was super impressed with the range of stuff that you are doing. So that's what we were hoping to cover. So let's start with me for a second, just because we've already mentioned it. So I got to get scanned at your facility. What was that you were like, how were you scanning me, and what was the rig that I was being scanned in?
Yeah, so that rig was our full body system. We've got 18 of those globally, 204 cameras, multiple LED lights. And essentially that is just a multi-camera array capable of capturing a full body pose. And then that obviously takes out all of the motion of the character. And then obviously when we pass that down to VFX, that gives you geometry and textures and everything that you'd need for a common character pipeline in the CG workflow.
So those cameras, are they all aiming for the same kind of coverage, or has you got some cameras in on the face, some on like the legs, and others wide for the whole body? How does it work?
So different cameras have been kind of calibrated to aim for specific key areas of the body. Obviously, you've got some areas of the body that are more intricate than others. So I guess over years of development, we've kind of fine-tuned that to the point of getting optimal coverage and optimal quality out of the scan data.
So in addition to providing the scan data that I might want as a visual effects supervisor to get into my pipeline, you actually did a nice little kind of turntable of me. Can you explain what that was?
So that was a radiance build, more specifically a Gaussian splat. And that is a similar process. It still goes through our structure for motion pipeline and still utilizes much of what is pre-existing for us. The difference for us is instead of rendering geometry, we're essentially rendering splats initialized on a point cloud. And this uses neural rendering. So it's a completely different workflow towards the end and a different output. But essentially what you're dealing with there is similar to the data that we've worked on with Union recently on your recent podcast. And that that really gives the viewer exactly what was shot in the camera. Where before, obviously, you would have to take that mesh, you would clean that up, you would then go through several different stages of recreating to get that realistic result.
Yeah, so we were talking about the story we did. We had Jordan from your office who was on a bike, and we also had that crowd stuff. So just sort of conceptually, there are two splits there, right? It's one where we've got something that's actually forming up for a more traditional pipe, and then you've got stuff that's forming up as effectively a point cloud, but it's not temporally linked in the sense of a polygonal space, but it gives you this incredible realism as we saw.
Yeah, no, definitely. It is definitely a really interesting technology, and I'd say we've had quite a lot of interest in that area, not even just within characters, across environments, across a whole plethora of different use cases. It's really, really interesting. But But yeah, I mean, that temporal stability is completely different because obviously we're now dealing with frame-by-frame dependent solving as opposed to solving geometry and that being consistent across frames. One of the things that's key for us is obviously the more cameras, the more accurate our initial data set that we're feeding into it, the more reliable that solve is and the better the stability is across frames.
Now, the stuff that you guys did for Union wasn't actually shot in that rig, right? The test shoot, I think you did in January, like January 22nd, that had like a lighting rig that kind of went over the top of the actors or Jordan. Can you explain those two different rigs and how they're used?
Yeah, definitely. I guess it's worth also just mentioning that stemmed a little bit from our Dorothy rig, which is our head capture system. And that is a dome structure, which provides lighting from the top as well as around.
Dorothy looks like a traditional light stage from the old sort of, you know, USC exactly. Kind of space. Yeah. But exactly not as big that. As the other ones.
No. So it's mostly contained just for head capture and different variations of 4D and facial performance capture. But the VCR rig is our biggest rig yet. And that is very much the same principle for illumination and lighting, but it encompasses obviously full characters, groups of characters, and we've also extended it further on some other productions. So the purpose of that rig is really to give you flexibility within capture, but it's the same principle as to capture Gaussian splatting.
4D so data. That VCR stands for volumetric capture rig, right?
Correct.
Yeah. How many cameras and like what's the specs on that?
So that's 40 machine vision cameras, Sony sensors, incredibly. I would say reliable, the way they stream to the PCs, all of the hardware, and also the frame rates, the ability to, I guess, increase that frame rate, shoot much faster motion, the ability to sync up to our lighting so we can maximize exposure, maximize and control all of the different variables and settings.
And just to get an idea of scale, right, that thing's about 6 meters or like it's about 4 or 5 meters high, right? It's like it's a pretty decent rig.
Yeah, exactly. It's about 6 meters. We obviously contain that to a 3x3 volume in a more recent shoot, but that again is controllable. All of the rigs are modular, so our framework just holds the cameras, the lights, and essentially the hardware that runs the show. But all of that hardware is used across Dorothy and other systems, so it's completely modular and rebuildable depending on the use case.
So in the case of the stuff that you were doing with Union for that great crowd work, you had 3 people in there and that was really, really interesting. But you did some earlier tests, which I think was the Prism stuff, which had some really interesting kind of volumetrics or almost like, wispy kind of overlapping imagery. Talk me through that. And that was, I presume, was that earlier than what we're talking about, than an earlier setup?
Yeah, that was a little bit more at the start of development. So we work closely with Niren Jones from Prism, and Niren's a DOP. So Niren came in and we looked at setting up different lights, and he worked closely with our head of department, Alex Dewar, to essentially start working out what this technology could do for us. And the immediate thing we noticed, obviously, was the images we were getting back were removing some of the limitations we'd typically have, like reflections and the fidelity and hair. So there was some obvious improvements there straight away. The other big one for us was the way it handled light. Again, neural rendering kind of representing what the camera saw rather than being more of an asset sense, which is what we're used to. We started playing around with different lighting, different looks, different effects. There's light painting and all sorts in there. And I think that really showcased the potential at the early stages.
That light painting is really interesting. But I have to say, to your earlier point about hair, there's a woman in a kind of a blue blouse with a tie around the front kind of thing. Her hair, which is, you know, fine, like stark, but the point is we're saying that there's not necessarily temporal consistency mathematically, but her hair, her wispy hair, seems to be captured enormously well. It doesn't flicker. It doesn't break up. It's actually remarkable fidelity.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think that's something that we've improved on as we've gone. I think things like hair, things like transparency, which have been harder to capture in the past. But that's something that even if we just take that as reference today, that's something that's already hugely valuable. But yeah, the workflows as well for Gaussians, they work slightly differently. We started looking at typical approaches like 2D masking and other solutions to get that same result. But then the technology is completely different, and we already have structure from motion, meaning we have multiple different camera views, meaning we can isolate that region, meaning that we're no longer dealing with those same problems, and we can mask out in a different way. And I think that really gives us a lot of power to be able to isolate thin strands of hair independently, for example.
Now, going back to what I would call the more traditional, I don't know, it sounds like it's earlier technology, but it isn't. It's remarkable. You do obviously do what I would call, as I say, traditional facial capture, where we're getting like fine detail skin, fine detail subsurface scattering properties. So talk us through that, because that must be the most in demand when it comes to faces, because it's obviously the most flexible.
Yeah, definitely. And this is where, I guess going back to Dorothy, that's where that really comes into play. So Dorothy is the system designed purely for facial capture. And this can range from just a neutral scan to fax shapes and also 4D performance. So it gives you the whole kind of variation of what you could possibly need for the human face. And then that extends on further. So we work closely with DI4D. And recently we acquired the team at DI4D, and we've been working even closely or more closely, which has really helped us kind of fine tune that process. So we've tailored their processing and their systems to our systems, meaning we can really optimize that workflow and extend what they were already doing. So they obviously were looking at facial motion capture. They were looking at HMC workflows and also 4D workflows. So for us, being able to combine that with our systems means we can offer that service kind of continued much more efficiently.
Yeah, I really admire DID's 4D work, because obviously if you're thinking about it, you think, oh, well, we'll just capture the fax poses and then we'll just interpolate between them. But there's two problems with that. Firstly, there's a non-linearity when you're trying to combine fax shapes. And then secondly, you can't have the texture sliding. So you need correspondence between the fax shapes. So in fact, 4D isn't just a convenience. It actually makes a heck of a difference as to how the skin moves in the and the way that you would combine expressions, especially subtle ones. It's a really some impressive work.
Yeah, definitely. And that's something that we were very much looking at the early stage. We started bringing in our 4D capture system into Dorothy after capturing fax for a long period of time. And I think we started looking at that 4D as even more accurate, and that kind of next level that we could provide to vendors and creatives alike. And that just meant that obviously teams would have even more reference to be able to use arguably more direct and true to what that performance would be for that character. So that was hugely powerful. And then, like you say, obviously being able to use TopoTrack to retopologize that data and have that accurately transfer across a range of 4D data or even facial shapes, that level of accuracy is not manually tracked. There's a huge amount of machine learning and algorithms that go into making sure that is a technical process and is efficiently done. And then once you have that, like you say, you have that texture consistency, which is really, really quite powerful.
So Colin and the team at DI4D themselves have done amazing stuff, like a huge amount of production material. And I mean, I said at the start, you guys were everywhere and you are, but like those guys have a ton of experience in themselves and producing huge amounts of stuff at volume. Like their Call of Duty stuff alone was like vast amounts of work. And it's really something to produce at volume as opposed to just getting a demo happening in a lab, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say that is definitely one of the things that we have to focus on is not just the odd job or the odd test, but it's doing it at scale and being reliable for every known use case in production. And working closely with the team before helped, but I think there's been a lot of work for us that's gone into working alongside them. That means we can really optimize this, and we can look at all the different workflows. There are times where people want to use HMCs. There are times where people want to capture 4D, and there are times where people want to have more control and less restrictions, which always is technically challenging for us. But that's where we kind of step in, and we work out what we can do and what is going to be reliable and give you the best results.
So we've been discussing stuff that I would say is kind of studio bound. It's not in the sense that you have mobile, you know, gear that can go out on location and to shoots and stuff. But I mean, it's still kind of in a volume that's relatively modest. But that's only part of what you guys do, right? Because you do amazing exterior work.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I guess to extend on that as well, even that HMC workflow, that does allow us to obviously step outside at different studios. And also we have a 4D system now that can go to location and capture less restrictively at the same time. But yeah, the environment work is the scale just increases tenfold. The team obviously methodically maps out and plans every different location, the best strategy. Every environment's different again. So we have LiDAR technicians. We also have drone operators. We have aerial captures. We cover every different variation for the use case that requires that.
The team did Iceland recently, right? What was that like? Because that seemed to be extraordinary. I mean, it's amazing, like extremely interesting environments. But also the thing that makes it so interesting is it's so goddamn demanding. It looks like the middle of like this looks like the moon if it wasn't for the lava.
Yeah, I think if we needed to capture on the moon, we'd probably make it work somehow, if I'm honest. The team are very good at logistically planning and making sure we get the right systems and the right crew out into any location we need. And I think there's multiple teams often out there at one time capturing LiDAR, capturing drone, capturing aerial. And I think that really, really helps with gathering the quality of data that you're seeing. And also, I guess, Gaussian splatting is also coming into that area as well within environments. So there's a whole range of different data types that we're able to provide.
The scale of those is really an interesting problem because, like, you don't tend to, on a human, start, I mean, maybe sometimes you'll start on an eyeball, but generally, like, it's, you know, at a kind of a modest distance where you can read a face, or it's in the distance, you know, it's like a digi double or an actor that's, you know, got a digital takeover. But the scale of these environments, you have to get in quite close at times because, you know, whatever. But then by the nature of being in an establishing shot, they're often then either go hugely wide. So to capture fidelity that works in a medium shot and works in an extreme wide means the data must be off the dial.
Yeah, it definitely is. I would say the first part of that problem is essentially narrowing down the scope and making sure we have a plan ahead. And that's what Nick and the team really focus on, is making sure we strategize and optimize how we're capturing that data, because no one wants to deal with masses of data that's not required. So after that stage, we obviously have different tools. Photogrammetry is still really, really beneficial for some of that textural details and that close-up information. But obviously, when it comes to range, using LiDAR scanners and then beyond that to aerial plates and drone work, that's where we can really start to, I guess, level up.
Does the company have a particular sort of camera or even supplier of cameras that you tend to favor? I mean, like, just at a technical level, for that exterior work, you need reliability, but you also need pretty much lightweight. Where do you kind of, or is it whatever suits the particular job?
Yeah, I guess it's like a lot of things. It's always changing. The manufacturers are always changing. So I guess a big part of what we do is we constantly keep up with those kind of things. We have good contacts in these areas, and we just make sure to regularly test, integrate, and keep ahead of that. And I guess we have a different set of cameras depending on the use case. We use Canons, we use Sonys, machine vision cameras. There's kind of no one size fits all for us. It really does depend on the subject and the requirements.
But you'd have to be pretty careful about the, because I mean, obviously what somebody wants as a visual effects supervisor is a file that's essentially raw, or if not raw, then at least you've got really good handle on what's going on at the sensor level.
Yeah, definitely. We always provide the raw data. That is something, and we work closely with vendors and the different teams. So we've kind of grown to understand exactly the requirements, and we continue to work alongside them. But raw data is essential to every workflow. And I think for us, a big part of what we're doing is we're not trying to do too much creative control. We don't look at essentially color grading anything or compressing anything where possible, unless requested. But the idea for us is to capture as technically accurately as possible the real world and provide that data for the creatives and others to use.
So have you been seeing a trend of just increasingly more and more resolution, or do you feel like there's sort of a plateauing of the requirements for like the, because I mean, you know, obviously in one sense you go 2K, then there were 4K, then there were 8K cameras and like, you know, beyond, but projection, you know, like shows effectively were delivery at 2K, then they were delivery at 4K. What's the mapping of your or the demands placed on you versus, you know, obviously our more experience with the deliveries?
Yeah, resolution is always a huge factor for us. I think like a lot of people, you always want more. You want more of everything. You want more because you also want more control down the line and more freedom and more flexibility. So resolution plays a huge part. I think that also comes with a lot of data, and that's always another problem. Managing huge amounts of data is no small challenge. So being able to account for that and try to reduce that with the teams, that's also essential. So there's
metadata that's going with that as well, because I'm going to really want the metadata on what was happening, and you must be able to gather a fair amount of that as well.
Yeah, exactly. So we have metadata within the files. We also have workflows for recording additional data, whether that's on the 4D systems or whether that's with the environments teams. We always make sure to capture as many variables as possible, especially when we know the production will need them.
Yeah, yeah. So is there any trends that you're experiencing at the moment in terms of what people are asking for or where it's sort of going?
At the moment, the trends, I have to say, are very unpredictable. They tend to be, the industry at the moment, there's lots of different areas of interest, and I think it's quite an exciting time. So for us, there's a lot of interest in Gaussian splatting, as we've mentioned. There's also a lot of interest in facial performance capture, which is more geared towards machine learning and that type of data set. And also, I think we're doing things within TopoTrack, which kind of extends beyond the day-to-day tracking, and we're looking at virtual cameras, for instance. So there's loads of different areas at the moment. I can't say there's one single trend, which keeps things really exciting, keeps us on our toes.
Yeah, it's an interesting development, isn't that idea of getting training data? Because, you know, essentially in the past it was the data set that you had, and it was either included in the data set or it wasn't. And now it's very much kind of a workflow where people can say, well, okay, I want that, but to be able to polish it, to be able to deal with the unexpected, I want a ton of extra training data. And then obviously from that, there's synthetic data and a whole bunch of other stuff that goes with it. But that training data is a sort of a whole different dimension to what somebody wants. It's less of an end game in of itself and more of a like a pipeline into a new way of then perhaps adding an extra level of realism or whatever.
Yeah, that definitely seems to be something that's come up a lot, is the idea of using that not just as the be all and end all, but the like you say, a way of improving what already exists. And I think that's quite a strong strategy, the ability to still go through the same traditional approaches, building the characters, capturing the motion capture. But when it comes to that final stage and that look development and that final 10-20%, we're definitely seeing a lot of people look towards facial performance capture for that. And I guess that also leads me to one of the things that we've tried to do, again, is really not restrict the systems as much as possible. So our facial performance capture system uses that same technology. So it's still structured from motion. You still have multiple camera angles capturing multiple lighting sequences. And that still gives us the ability to capture 4D data and still use the topo track process to provide motion capture data with a defined topology. So then there's no locking in. It's similar systems, similar technology, but multiple outputs, meaning people have as much control as possible.
So how the heck did you get into this in the first place? Like, what was the, like, how, what led you to where you are today? Like, what was the path? Where did you start?
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, I guess like a lot of people in the industry, very much a creative in heart. And I went to Bournemouth University, being one of the primary universities in the UK for animation. Eventually I found my way to DNEG, and the goal for me was always to be a character artist. I always loved creating characters and doing that side of things. And that's what I'd done for a little bit. And then gradually I ended up doing some additional work on set, doing more shoot related work. And I guess once I saw the locations and I guess the bigger picture of filmmaking and being more and more introduced into that area, I guess I never looked back. I still do some of that on the side, but it is kind of once you find the way, it's hard to want to change. And it's been really, really, really good, I've got to say, being able to do a bit of both and see that whole process from capture and from set all the way through to kind of post-production is really good to see the full process.
Well, thanks so much for taking time to walk us through that. I mean, there's so much that you guys do. I'm sure we could have been here for hours, but thanks so much, man.
Appreciate it, Mike.
Well, thanks so much, Jamie, for taking the time to get us up to date on some of what you've been working on at Clear Angle Studios. As I mentioned in the intro, our latest FX podcasts with Union's David Schneider and our Man on Fire interview with Kevin Lingenfelsler both talk about how they work with Clear Angle, so be sure to check those out if you haven't already. Well, that's it for this episode. For Mike Seymour, I'm John Montgomery. Thanks for listening to or watching this FX podcast.
Please let us know if you have any suggestions for stories or future podcasts. You can reach us by clicking the Contact Us link at the top of the homepage. This podcast is copyright FX Guide, LLC. Broadcast or redistribution is prohibited without the expressed written consent of FX Guide.